Nice case of 97, 2587 in the matter of Ellie Christine Willett versus Guy Willett.
Remarriages that occur after parents separate. So then in many cases you'll have a father and mother that are divorced, both remarried. There are new children in the sex area, both of them. Maybe children from one of the new wife's previous marriage, in addition to maybe new children within that family, and then you've got the first child. So I think it eliminates the confusion in relationship to schools, in relationship to doctors, if you can identify the child, and the more information that you have, which you can acquire through the name of the kid, will be easier to not make a good identity or not have a sex problem. I think it's very, very limited in the application, and it equates identity, in Newcomb does, equates identity to dollars, equates best interest to dollars. The criteria you're using is, we'll leave the name with the surname with the father if he's paying child support and she's exercising his independence. And certainly, if those are the criteria for best interest that we're using in best relationship, we have a significant difference in what our customers do as well. As a practical matter, money is seldom, if ever, used as a criteria in deciding which to do.
Maybe once, for instance, if you pay the father to not change the court, we immediately change the name to the mother's name. As soon as we carry out the reasoning and spread it to it.
I just think the reasoning and applied to cases today is just totally inadequate, and I think it can be resolved fairly simply. It doesn't require a legislative change or anything like that. It simply requires a direction to the probate courts that are dealing with name changes of minors to expand what they consider, what they're looking at as criteria for best interest.
Doesn't your argument boil down to that you allege an abuse of discretion on the part of the trial court? Purely and simply that.
I don't think so. I think I'm alleging a time gap here, a misapplication of a statute to new situations. Maybe stagnancy is what I'm alleging. But the fact is that...
Well, the trial court cited the right statute.
No question about that.
Okay, so you just say that the trial court didn't interpret the statute properly?
I'm saying that the trial court interpreted best interest of the child, which is the standard that they use, and much too narrow standard they consider to far too few.
Abuse of discretion.
Limited discretion, yes. And that is
to call to Justice Douglas' question, the trial court didn't say that it could not, under the statute, do what you want it to do, did it?
No.
So, abuse of discretion. The trial court, there's no issue of law here. The trial court didn't. If the trial court had said, I read the statute does not permit me to exercise my discretion in favor of you, your client, then we'd have a legal issue, wouldn't we? But the trial court simply decides it's not in the best interest of this child to add the mother's maiden name, what's our standard of review?
Our standard of review is the use of discretion for the application.
And that the trial court acted arbitrary and unreasonable in the way he applied it. Simply by saying that the father was changed the course, this being the child, he had the right to be the trial court treatment.
What syllabus would you have as right to give instruction to trial judges?
And specifically, it is in applying the general interest test, which is applied to the name change of the minor, that the court consider more than the simple factors of support and visitation.
You
consider parental relationships, that they consider continuity for the child, they consider the child's environment,
well, I guess it's the Newcomb test, whether or not the Newcomb test applies in a case where the father's name is not being removed. No request to remove the father's name. This court took Newcomb and said, Newcomb says, if dad's a good dad, we don't give a name change. Didn't take into consideration that we weren't usurping dad's name.
I guess what I'm asking asking us if there should be a new test, a case that puts out a new test, not overturning the NUCM, but simply expanding the test that's traditionally been applied. And the reason for that being that the situations are new and require a more expanded approach.
Whatever they were. matters were made and made sure. The only point I was making was the attorney's question had been done, but the fact that the request was used to make sure that that's the first. It doesn't just say that if the father takes the board, if the father is the child, it says there are other circumstances. The totality of circumstances will include the father's education, the emotional consideration of children. The court magistrate had a wrong hearing on this matter. He determined that both the statutes, reasonable and proper cause, had not been shown in light of Newcomb. Newcomb goes much further in light of what we talked about here this morning. None of the circumstances were presented. There was nothing factually presented to the trial court to reflect that this was in the best interest of Ellie, who was in a 2 or 3 year old, to have her name changed. The statute is clear, it's reasonable, proper, reply Newcomb to that test. And I think those criteria, Newcomb, that I think the law is practicing on doing apply those, that is the current status of law. And the appellate court, by the way, talks about using discretion, and the trial court did not use discretion. They did a specific and thorough job in this situation, and there was nothing against the evidence. Transcript before the appellate court. That is certainly one of the options that this board has. But under the current existing law, I believe both the public court, the trial court, and magistrate by law, it was available at the time of the constitution.
You haven't mentioned it, but if we're going to change the standard by which courts determine names of children and parents and whoever else wants to have their names changed, should that not be a legislative matter?
Yes, sure.
It's not like a public policy issue to me that perhaps the General Assembly ought to consider if times have changed so much that, and I'm not denying that they have, but that's precisely the kind of issue the General Assembly perhaps should debate and make a decision on it. Assuming the statute doesn't give the trial court the discretion to do what the trial judge is asked to do here, I'm not convinced that the statute doesn't give the trial judge that discretion, but assuming that we need to write some new law, I'm making your argument for you, I guess, but okay, I try not to do, but it seems to flare out at a mild pace.
No, you're right. I think that is an appropriate place to legislation, and certainly Dennis has this court to conserve this court's legislation.
I guess that's why I asked your question earlier about what your syllabus would be, to see whether this is a legislative matter or a judicial matter. And I guess in looking at the magistrate's recommendation to the judge, the magistrate did certainly cited Newcomb as a test, but also referred to the fact that there had been no showing how this name change would affect the child, benefit the child. And I guess, again, I'm looking at discretion. If we decide that the trial judge is wrong, we just think it would benefit the child. What's the standard? Don't we have to find that there's arbitrary use of authority here by the trial judge?
The Supreme Court says everything changes. It doesn't make sense to keep saying anything. And I think that's the first criteria we're looking back at what the trial court. If you're looking at this whole name change, then I think you need to tell the trial court to consider other factors. The factors that they are relying on, and all the cases relying on, one, number one, he ought to be doing, and number two, he's statutorily doing, and number three, with the mother is also doing it in an equal way, then, you know.
Then cases where the mother is earning more money, or perhaps it's the breadwinner family who follows that argument, then the mother should have, if the children should have the mother's name, then she is supporting the children.
If you follow that through, everything through, that's what you end up with.
That's what we should do.
And our thinking is completely that when you've got these, there are much more issues to look at, primarily the name of that education, and to eliminate, if we can simply eliminate, by simple act, eliminate some of the problems that children are having, then there's no harm. There's no harm to the father, there's no harm to the mother, if you know what it's asking for, and there's no harm to the child. And that should be part of the decision. Perhaps this kind of decision should be under the jurisdiction of the domestic relations court. But I don't know, sadly as it is, only allow the domestic relations court to change the mother's name at the end of a proceeding. I'm not necessarily advocating that because perhaps there is a benefit to bifurcation in different perspectives. But I do think that we have it does call for legislative change, it calls for a direct support. And one thing that you mentioned, Justice, that is of concern here is the implication that because mother chose to take back her maiden name, somehow there's a negative there. If mother had chosen to keep her married name for the child's purpose, for identification with the child, she chose to keep Wilhite instead of going back to Williams. So that her name remains Janet Wilhite. What happens when she remarries? Then is she supposed to keep the first husband's name while she's married to the second husband in order to preserve the identity? And isn't that a lot more convoluted thinking than simply to allow you to expand the name very simply to put it in so that you can easily identify the child's both name for thousands of them over there?
Thank you. Case submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion.